Good afternoon, Trinidad and Tobago. This is High Noon. It's Friday. And of course, we're looking at issues around the country. Also in the news today, we are also looking at the reports that the Commission of Inquiry into the Urban Development Corporation, UDCOT, and the construction sector, we understand their report may not reach His Excellency Professor George Maxwell Richards on Sunday for several reasons. We'll look at that as well. But in studio today, we are going to be chatting with someone. We're going to be looking at several issues, one of which is the controversial CLECO bailout, which took place just about a year ago. And of course, we will get into the meat of that matter. Several things came out of that. Last year, we had figures being bandied about. Out of that coming, of course, we heard that the finance minister may or may not have prior word of what was going to take place. And there still exists on the order paper in Parliament a motion against no confidence against brought by Kamala Prasad-Mutesa. All of those things we will look at today. Our guest in studio is Mr. Afra Rimmon. He's a chartered surveyor, a columnist with the Business Guardian and the Trent Tobago Review. Good afternoon, Mr. Rimmon. Welcome to High Noon.
Thank you, Mr. Lumsden. Thank you for hosting this important show.
We are most certainly welcome. Mr. Rimmon, we're looking at CLECO, and in the context that you have written several pieces, you've looked at it critically and thoroughly, if you want to say it like that. 1 year after the bailout, where are we with CLECO?
Well, one would have to say that the position today, as incredible as that seems, is even more confused than it was on the 30th of January 2009, mm-hmm. when the bailout was announced,
yes.
to a very surprised public at the Central Bank press conference.
Yes.
And the reason I say it's even more confused, there are two or three substantial reasons. Reason number one I would focus on is the whole question of how much money is involved.
Right.
We don't actually have a clear idea of how much money is involved.
What was the original figure touted?
Well, in fact, no original figure was ever touted. Yeah. We never got a firm, clear figure, and that is part of the ongoing difficulty. The other area that is even more mysterious, mm-hmm. is the question of the whereabouts of the leadership.
Right.
At the time of the collapse on the 30th of January last year, at that press conference, the CLECO, the CL Financial chiefs,
right.
were most present. Mr. Mm-hmm. Dupree was on the podium.
Yes.
There are photographs in the press of Mr. Montai, Mr. Dupree, and Mr. Ewart Williams together, and so on. We've all seen the photographs. And today, Mr. Dupree's whereabouts are mysterious. I think Mr. Montai is said to be in retirement. Last thing I read in the press, something on a farm in the country with goats or sheep or something. Mr. Caballo has taken a resignation, mm-hmm. who was the chief financial officer for the group. Mr. Steve Bideshi, who is the chief executive officer of the group, he has taken a resignation as well. Both of those were effective on the 30th of January this year. And Mr. Claude Musebali, who is the CEO of CLECO, the most important organ of the group, he also took a retirement, a resignation. And he left on the 14th of February. It was Valentine's Day, but it was no love affair. So on the second count, the first count is how much money is involved.
Right.
We don't know, and I will go into that in depth. The second element of confusion is exactly where is the leadership on this. Mm-hmm. There was some clarity of leadership roughly a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
There's quite a great bit of confusion on that question now. And the third point, of course, is where are we going? Is CLECO actually going to be rescued? Is it going to become restarted as a viable insurance company? Is it something we could look forward to? Is it really being slowly wound up? What is actually the position in terms of the strategic direction?
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a need for some more clarity on that.
What was the original intention when this whole press conference took place, the dramatic press conference at Central
yes.
Bank? What was the intention back then?
Well, that's a pregnant question. I mean, we have intention and we have stated intention. I don't know what the intention was. The intention that was stated in the statements made by the Minister of Finance and the Governor of the Central Bank,
mm.
and Mr. Dupree also made statements in support of their statements, the intention was to stabilize the market.
Right.
It was felt that the collapse of CL Financial was too huge an event to go without government intervention. It posed what the specialists call a systemic risk. If CL Financial went down, it would pose a risk to our economy. And the intention was to support that company in crisis by putting in money so that depositors and policyholders would be protected, people mm-hmm. who had placed their investments at CL Financial. The company was going to put something back on the table by disposing of its assets so that the government may have been out of pocket temporarily.
Right.
But if the government put in $1 billion to help people who needed to get money from CL Financial, CL Financial would sell $1 billion worth of things.
Right.
And there was a list of a priority of items that would be sold to put back $1 billion into the treasury. So mm-hmm. the treasury's funds were to be replenished.
Right.
That MOU, the one that was the 30th of January 2009,
mm-hmm.
is actually being published on the Ministry of Finance website.
Yes.
And is available for people to see as a public document.
Right.
A second MOU has been entered into, which is what makes your question absolutely pregnant, Larry.
Mm-hmm.
A second MOU has been entered into on the 12th of June 2009. And that MOU was stated in the Ministry of Finance press release. The ministry issued a 3-page press release upon the signing of that second MOU. That second MOU was stated by the Ministry of Finance in their first paragraph to be supplementary to and designed to give effect to the first MOU.
Right.
But what we have found, people like myself who've been trying to get hold of it, is that the second MOU has been deemed confidential. And in fact, we've been told that it is not going to be released. I asked the minister this in public at a breakfast hosted by CMMB back on September the 10th, just after the budget, and we've had correspondence on it, and I don't think it's something the ministry is going to release. It's been deemed a secret document. So we have effectively one of the biggest transactions in the country. No one knows how big it is. The one thing we know for sure is that we are paying for it, and also that we can't get any details.
Is that a standard procedure with things of this nature? Because, I mean, this is the public's money you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
This is public investment in something. Is that a proper or a right stance for our minister to be taking where public funds are concerned?
Well, I don't think so, because we're dealing really with an absolutely huge sums of money, huge sums of money. I'll go into the details of what the sums involved. But just to throw a couple of figures on the table, Sir Charles, on the 7th of September last year, when the minister read the budget, the Minister of Finance, the minister told us that the sum of 5.4 million had been allocated on the CL Financial bailout, yes? And
yeah.
I think she said also that about 1.9 billion had been spent and the rest had to be taken up. We saw in Sunday's Guardian, Sunday just gone, that a bond of 3.4 billion was being floated to raise money for the rest of the bailout. But in fact, at a really fundamental level, we have a mystery around how much money is involved. Because after September the 7th, there were two subsequent events that are of great importance here. The first event was that on the 2nd of November, the Eastern Caribbean Currency Union announced the bankruptcy, the insolvency of British American Insurance Company, which was an important part of CL Financial.
Yes.
It was a long statement, which you don't have to go into all of it here, but the government of Trinidad and Tobago made subsequent announcements that it was putting in $50 million to support the efforts to rescue the British American people who had lost their funds. The second episode happened on the 24th of December, which is Christmas Eve. There were headline front page stories in both the Express and the Newsday stating that Karani workers who had their pension entitlements lodged with CLECO and were not able to get, the Treasury was putting up $400 million. It was the headline in both papers. $400 million was going in from the government to make sure the Karani workers got their pensions. The question that comes into my mind, and I do not know the answer, is whether that $5.4 billion stated by the Minister of Finance on the 7th of September includes the $50 million, which is over 300 million TT, that we're talking about in November.
Right.
Did it include the 400 million that we're talking about on the 24th of December? And we really have had no clear statements explaining going forward, well, listen, this money was part of that, or this was a little underestimated. We don't know.
Hmm.
So on the really first question, how much, how big, We don't know how big it is.
You know that, but you know that takes it back to where you started, where mm-hmm. when you started talking about clarity.
Mm-hmm.
Who could or should bring that clarity? Who do we ask to get that clarity that is needed?
Well, in my view, the person to whom the task would naturally fall is the person to whom the bailout has been delegated. And as far as I'm aware, the bailout has been delegated into the hands of the central bank, which is the governor of the central bank. Mm-hmm. And the governor of the central bank gave a press conference on the 13th of February last year. And at that press conference, Governor Ewart Williams, the specific purpose of the press conference was to update the public on the progress of the bailout. And among other things, the governor told us that the situation at CLECO was far, far worse than they had thought when they went in and signed the MOU.
Right.
And he promised, because of how important it was, and I took his promise at his word, he promised to keep the public informed, to have regularly press
happened.
Conferences, I don't think so.
A year later.
And supply regular information so that people could be aware of what was happening. Now, I'm not saying that no information has come out. Information has certainly come out. But that regular effort to achieve clarity, I think we have gone away from that path. And at the moment, I could ask the question I asked just now, the 5.4, the 300 and something million, the 400 million, where are we? And it's a genuine question because no one has spoken on it. So the lack of clarity is absolutely important, Sir Charles.
Mm-hmm. What about the other countries to which CL and CLECO, for that mm-hmm. matter, exist? How is that affecting us here in Trinidad? Are we paying that price?
Well, there is a very critical element in what you're raising, Larry. Because I mentioned earlier the British American situation, where British American Insurance Company is an important organ mm-hmm. in the CL Financial group of companies. And that company was declared insolvent on the 2nd of November last year. And what listeners need to tune into here is the extent of the insolvency. Because the extent of that insolvency could possibly give us clues about what it is we are facing in Trinidad and Tobago. And I'll talk about that for a minute. The group of countries called the Eastern Caribbean Currency Union issued a joint communique. It's available on my website, afroraymond.com or normangilvan.info. Either website has the information. And among the figures, in terms of quantum, the insolvency was $775 million, the quantity of insolvency. In terms of proportion, if you were to take all of the assets of British American and liquidate them, sell them and put all that money into a pool and use that pool of money to try to match the liabilities of British American, apparently only 10 cents in the dollar is available.
Wow.
Which means that 9 out of 10 cents, let's put it as plain as we can for the listeners, 9 out of 10 cents that was invested in British American is not there. I don't want to say any more than that. I am not a lawyer. But this is the report issued by the Eastern Caribbean Currency Union. 9 out of 10 cents is not there. It's as serious as that.
Yeah. I am wondering the approach taken mm-hmm. Where, you know, because I've heard it, and I've heard the central bank governor and also finance minister say it was a necessary thing for us to bail out CLECO.
Yes.
And I have always wondered if it was really that necessary for us to really bail out CLECO, should we have just let the whole thing collapse and, you know, try another approach as far as people and their monies are concerned, or the approach that we took, just jumping into it without actually knowing the extent of the damage. I would like to hear your thoughts on it.
Well, again, another pregnant question. I have not supported the bailout. I don't support it, but I do accept the fact that to have let the whole thing slide, which is a point you're posing, Sir Charles, to let the whole thing slide would have been a tremendous threat to the stability of our financial system. I do accept that. The question is whether that threat was something we should have gone through with. Now, the real important thing here is to get the question of how was the whole thing scripted? And I think readers, listeners need to focus in on this. That company was stated in its accounts at the end of 07, that's the last year they issued audited accounts. That company, CL Financial, was stated to have an asset value of over 100 billion Trinidad dollars. On the 6th of November 2008, the Business Guardian ran a special called Surviving the Storm. And the group finance director, Michael Caballo, he's retired now, he's resigned now, Caballo gave an interview to the Business Guardian in which he spoke about the strength of the company. The company had $100 billion in assets and could weather any storm. On the 18th of November of 08, CL Financial published the said accounts, which were dated 31st of December 07, also $100 billion. On the 13th of January 09, 56 days after they published the accounts, Mr. Dupree writes a letter to the governor of the central bank. That letter was read into the record of our parliament. That's called the Hansard. It's available at ttparliament.org. And it was read in to the Hansard on Wednesday, the 4th of February last year, by the Minister of Finance, taking part in the debate. And attached to Dupree's letter was a table setting out the value of the company. And that table showed a total value of $23.9 billion. Now, when they meet on the 30th of January, Sir Charles, to announce the bailout to the public, everyone reverts back to the script that is $100 billion.
Right.
So the chairman of the company writes and tells you, I have 24. And by the 30th of January, it's back to 100. And the question, and the 100 was used, let us be really clear, the 100 was used as a justification to say to the public, listen, the size of our economy is 140, 150. The size of this one group is 100. And if we don't save them, we will be cutting off our own nose to spite ourselves. We have to save them because they could pull down the whole country. And I think, I don't want to say any more in terms of questionable things, but I do think as a priority, we need to have the audited accounts for CL Financial for the 31st of December 2008, signed by the same firm of auditors, PricewaterhouseCoopers. Every year they have published audited accounts as at the end of the particular financial year, and it will allow us to fix at a particular point in time a particular asset value and to be able to start to make sensible conclusions about this situation. In other words, was it too big to fail?
Do you feel that that information coming forward about the asset base of the company was instrumental in, because it seems to me right now as if the central bank governor and the central bank was duped into this whole arrangement. Do you think that those, and it seems like doctored figures, fabricated figures now, were placed before him?
Well, I couldn't really say. I just want to see what the 31st of December 2008 is, signed by Pricewaterhouse. I don't really want to get into who doctored what. I think it's really important for us having this sort of discourse, Sir Charles and Larry. I think it's very important for us to insist on transparency, to insist on integrity. It is our country, it is our taxpayers' money, it is our economy we're trying to stabilize. And if we're trying to stabilize in the cause of transparency, and better functioning, we need to have basic accountability. And basic accountability starts with the audited accounts at the end of December 08. You can't go left and you can't go right. I'm not interested in waiting for bubble increases. Probably he has some interesting things to say. I want to see what Pricewaterhouse has to say as at the 31st of December 08.
All right, we're going to take a break. But before we do, when we come back, I want to look at whether or not the public is viewing this bailout as highly corrupt. And they're not satisfied, like you say, with the information being given. They think a lot has been hidden. Mm-hmm. When we come back, we look at that. And, of course, later in the program, we'll take your call. Stay with us. High Noon continues. Our guest today is Mr. Afra Raymond. We continue to look at Clico. And later in the program, we will ask Mr. Raymond about the controversial John Off report.
All right, of course, just before we get back to the program, just to let you know that today, Friday the 26th of February, while the region's governing body of football, the Caribbean Football Union, will be hosting their gala dinner. This year, the CFU has partnered with one of the world's most powerful football associations, the English FA. The dinner will feature some of the biggest names in football in the world. Speakers at the event include FIFA Vice President Jack Warner, International President of the England 2018 bid team, and a special invited feature speaker. You can join Power Water 2 FM from 7:30 p.m. as we bring this historic event to you live. And you wanted a bigger Lotto Plus jackpot? Well, you have got it. $7.8 million is waiting for you in this Saturday's Lotto Plus draw. And there is only one secret to getting that $7.8 million in your bank account. You got to have a Lotto Plus ticket to have a chance. What will you do with that $7.8 million jackpot? Well, you can do whatever you want. Just get your Lotto Plus ticket today. Yeah. Larry, we're back inside.
A lot of money, and maybe, how much is it? How much million?
$7.8 million.
Well, it is less than what I'm reading here. Here, guess what? It's less than the amount that Clico was due to pay. It says $631 million Clico payout began to do on Friday. Some of the headlines, Mr. Raymond, I'm going to read, that came out of this bailout, $631 million Clico payout due to begin on Friday. Depositors run into woes to recover Clico funds. Mm-hmm. Nunes Ishera owns CL Financial Stocks. CDB Press hits regulator over Clico affairs. Imber says Express fabricated story on when the government knew. Bailout good move, but come clean. John Public must get the true picture. Clico downgraded since August, the year before. And Ducaran takes government to task on Clico. Dupre eyes future in liquor empire. All those headlines coming out of the Clico bailout. The most important one to me, though, is the fact that the man in the street does not know all that is in this whole bailout issue.
Yeah.
How does it affect them?
Well, it's interesting that you should have closed off the last section, Larry, by mentioning to listeners that I would be speaking a little bit about the Off Commission.
Yes.
Because, of course, one of the key issues being litigated, and we are awaiting a decision of a High Court judge right now, mm-hmm. in the Off matter, is the whole question of apparent bias.
Right.
A perception of bias.
Yes.
And the court was invited to consider whether a perception of bias could have developed from a man in the street,
right. Bring
out what took place. And what's interesting about linking it back to the CL Financial matter is that, of course, we can't sit in the studio here and say that this or that act was corrupt.
Right.
But we can say that there certainly is a perception,
right.
There's apparent corruption or irregular behavior here. We had a situation where in the beginning, one of the first things we learned was that I think it was the Minister of Finance and the Governor of the Central Bank, Kamla Prasad Bisesa, raised the allegations, had deposits in the company and had taken out their deposits and so on. Both individuals explained their actions. So that was one.
Mm-hmm.
Then we had the allegation, which a lot of us knew, but it came out in the press as well, that CL Financial had made heavy contributions to the PNM in the last election and I suppose in elections previous. Then there was, of course, the shocking revelation on the 7th of March, which was exclusive in the Trinidad Guardian, that the Minister of Finance was in fact a shareholder of CL Financial. And then, of course, lastly, the entire grouse amongst the man in the street is that, if I could talk for them for a second, is that in fact it does not appear that anybody is going to be punished. So a great deal appears to have gone wrong. Great deal of money is missing. We've listed some of the sums before. Great deal of money is missing. And it doesn't appear that people are being held to account. It doesn't appear that anybody is going to be required to sell anything,
yeah.
or to put up with any hardship, any legal or financial punishment. So all of those things add up in the mind of the ordinary man. Just like the case in the High Court with Judicata about apparent and perception,
mm-hmm.
they all add up to an apparent perception that something is not quite right, that it's a corrupt situation. So it's a little bit ironic that the government company is using the arguments about apparent and perception to challenge
All right,
the Off Commission. And those same things are existing here.
We'll begin receiving some calls now.
Sure.
So let's take them out.
So people, you can call us at 222-TALK. You can also call us at 900-206-2POWER. Of course, Texas, you know how to reach us on the message board, right? All right. I think I held out a little too long for you. But the lines are open now, so you can start a call. So in the meantime, Larry, we'll continue.
Right. So we were discussing as well the issue of how does this bailout, are we paying people abroad other than Trinidad and Tobago, investors in Clico CL, are we at all going to be making payments? That's a concern a lot of people have.
Well, as far as I know, if I go back to the statements made by the Minister of Finance and I think the Prime Minister also spoke on it, I don't think that at this point we are paying overseas investors. And I'm carefully saying at this point, because the way things unfold, it could become necessary at a later stage to start paying out to those people. But I don't think at this point we are.
All right. We'll take another call now. Good afternoon. Welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Good afternoon, to you.
I didn't get the name of your guest.
Mr. Afra Raymond.
Okay, Mr. Raymond. It really, you can't be a little bit pregnant. It has to be either or. When the government said that there were $100 billion worth of assets, and based on that, they ventured into bailing out because there was sufficient assets to be recovered after sale.
Yes.
Is it that they knew what they were saying was false, or is it that there were insufficient due diligence and they made a fundamental error?
Okay, that question could only be answered by the people who were in that spot on the time. And more to the point, we would only be able to get people like yourself and myself who are outside of that circle, I'm presuming you're outside of the circle, but people like that, like us, would only be able to get an insight into it if those accounts, those audited, assigned accounts are published. So we know what was the true position as of 31st of December 08. But it's an important question you're raising. I don't know the answer.
Hello, good afternoon.
Yeah, good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you. Welcome to the program.
Yeah, this is Harry Harinarayan, President of the Hindu Christian Colin.
Good day, Mr. Harinarayan.
Yeah, well, I just want to clear one issue concerning the CL financial bailout. Uh-huh. Now, are you hearing me?
Yeah, we're hearing you. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, there's a lot of speculation and talk that the Hindu Credit Union have also asked for a bailout from the government of Trinidad and Tobago. And that was also said by the current issue of the Minister of Finance. I want to make it abundantly clear. At no time did our board of directors of the Hindu Credit Union have ever went cap in hand to any government. What we have done, we have suffered a run that was in excess of callback for deposit, in excess of over $750 million. We paid out $425 million. And on the 20th of June, 2007, we, board of directors, together with the shareholders of the credit union, have passed a resolution for the divestment of the credit union assets. And as a result of that, the government intervened by appointing a liquidator. We are now before the courts in respect to the divestment of the credit union assets in relation to solving our problem. Now, what I also concern about is your guest, Mr. Arthur Raymond. Mr. Arthur Raymond, in 2005, the Hindu Credit Union had a major issue with Colonial Life Insurance Company, where Mr. Dupree have entered an agreement with us for a divestment of the real estate portfolio. And there was a valuation issue. And in that valuation issue, they said Raymond and P and Arthur Raymond have devalued the assets of the Hindu Credit Union significantly.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you very much. All right. Caller, good afternoon to you.
Yeah, I wasn't quite finished.
Okay. Well, I wasn't sure about that.
Sorry about that.
Yes. Because this thing is a rather tangled web.
It is.
Yes.
If it is that letter that indicated $23.9 billion, I mean, even for a chairman to have arrived at that figure, it cannot be accidental, because he must have known that there was a billion, 100 billion worth. So to even look at a letter, or for someone to type it to say 23.9, the difference is so humongous that it must have popped its head up as an error. So to bring the document to table would mean that it seems to be a reality that that's what it could be. Now, if it is that, you realize that the fraud is equal to that was recently perpetuated internationally by Madoff. If it is that humongous, and he is presently adorned with stripes. So I patiently await to see when this thing, and it has to finally come out one day, what will happen to those who have been involved, because it's not a clerical error. It's a massive discrepancy.
Well, Paula,
and it must have been noticed by those who brought the figures forward.
Yeah, well, Paula, all I can say to you is that if you look at the ttparliament.org for the 4th of February, page 628 is the page in the Hansard. The minister reads the letter into the record there, and you can see it for yourself. It's a very precise figure.
No, but I'm saying to you, and I have no
I understand your point.
You
I understand
accurate,
your point.
But
I understand your point.
For those who have even entered it into the Hansard,
yes.
I don't think that they could sleep at night.
I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I understand your
you.
Position clearly.
Yeah. Yeah.
I clearly understand what you are articulating. I mean, for those who can't understand your language, well, so be it. But I understand you clearly.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Good.
Thank you very much,
Cora.
I think given what he called us actually saying also as we draw the Madoff situation, we're in two different jurisdictions where things like that don't really happen here. So I think that is what is giving the average individual this fear, as you know, something is that is not right is happening. And you know what? We will, at the end of the day, we will have no redress. We will have no satisfaction because, as I said, people have just been disappearing, yes, resigning, and you know. And what is going to happen? Do we have that power of recall to get them back to answer some of these allegations or charges that will come forward?
Well, it's interesting, Sir Charles, because one of the important aspects about the CL Financial matter is that the company had a significant overseas dimension. And if we turn our minds for a moment to the Alan Stanford situation in Antigua, we had a lawsuit, it was reported in the Express, we had a lawsuit that was launched by some US-based investors who had invested with the Stanford Bank. They launched a lawsuit in a court in Houston, and that lawsuit alleged that the government of Antigua, the regulators and so on, had gotten into a relationship with Stanford that was too close, and they had not done their job properly. And because they had not done their job properly, the investors had suffered losses. This is the allegation. I don't know whether it's true or false. The point is that the government of Antigua is now facing a lawsuit in a court in Houston, and I think the sum of money is some colossal, I forget this, some $15 billion US or something. Something could bankrupt the whole Caribbean. But the point is that we in Trinidad and Tobago need to be mindful of that Antigua situation, because CL Financial had a significant overseas dimension, and it is possible that an investor in CL Financial, or someone who perhaps had loaned money to CL Financial, who is based overseas, could bring a lawsuit against our people in a courthouse which is outside of the control of the people in this principality. And that is a situation where, in fact, a great deal of information could tumble out in a manner that nobody had expected.
Okay. We have callers online. Callers, good afternoon.
Yeah, good afternoon to the panel and yourself, Sir Charles.
Yes, caller.
Good afternoon.
Yeah, I'm hearing what Mr. Raymond is saying, and I totally disagree with him that in the sense that we will ever see a foreign investor come in, because he took the money from Trinidad. The investors in the U.S. were receiving the money, and we in Trinidad were handing out the money. So that is a fundamental difference. He didn't collect deposits in the U.S., he collected deposits from Trinidad. The second issue, we'll never see an audit being taken place because there's a complicity with this government. Through the Montai connection, through the Dupre connection, and when you look at $20 million being given for the elections of 2007, there's a serious complicity, and it goes right to the heart of the PNM. So you will never see the light of day in this matter. As long as the PNM is there, we'll never see the light of day. And I think a lot more people lose their money.
Okay.
All right. Just before we get back into the call, you have one more before?
Yeah, let's have one line. Hello, good afternoon, caller.
Hello.
Yes, caller.
I want to say, when they're amending the constitution, I want them to get a lie detector test for these people and them, especially the police force and these parliamentarians and them. I want to make it a issue now, because we're getting brutalized, we're getting all kind of different laws and all kind of things.
I hear
you. They have to get something too.
Thank you very much. We've got to keep that on the front burner for you, caller. I promise you.
We just have a few minutes left, but Mr. Raymond, I do want to get into the Oath Commission.
Mm-hmm.
It has been a very instrumental piece of happening in our landscape. It took about a year or so. Several things came out of that. They're in the court, they're out of the court, controversy, Bucknell, mayhem, you name it. Now we are hearing that the report that was scheduled to be delivered on Sunday going to be delayed until March because of a ruling we're waiting for.
Yes.
What sort of implication all these things are having on our citizens?
I'm cautious about commenting too much on the court case because, as you may know, we as responsible media are not allowed to make a comment about a possible judgment of the court, and the court should do this or the court should do that. So I have no opinion on that.
Right.
I could say that the case you got bought, as I mentioned earlier on, the case you got brought, and I said bought, that was an error, Freudian slip. But the case you got brought was one of a perception or a case of apparent bias. And they were trying to prove that the commissioners exhibited apparent bias, a perception of bias and so on, that could lead an ordinary person to conclude that they had made up their mind before, and therefore Unicorn was not getting a fair hearing. And it was very interesting, I will say, to see that the QC for Unicorn, Mr. Andrew Goddard, in one of the coming down to the end of the hearing before Justice Mira Dina Moore, Andrew Goddard complained, he lamented that in fact he had tried to get off to go on to the witness stand. This is Professor John Huff, who was chairman of the commission. He tried to get off to go on the witness stand to face questions, and he had received an instruction from the board of Unicott that Huff was not to be questioned. And of course, Unicott had received his instructions from its owners, which is the government of Trinidad and Tobago. And it just goes to show, listeners who are paying attention, it just goes to show that the government of Trinidad and Tobago can and did control the proceedings. So it's just another ingredient for us to wonder at the outcome. I will make a substantive point here, Larry, that we are waiting on the Off Commission. There's a sort of a sense, those of us who have an interest in this matter, and that's a great many people, there's a sort of a sense of waiting to exhale. We're waiting to see what will the commission find, but how much money is missing, will anybody will get charged, who is criticized, and so on and so on. But really, the big substantive issue, as far as I'm concerned, is this. Unicott is the best performing state enterprise. The Prime Minister has said so repeatedly. The Cabinet has said so repeatedly. They're the best of the best. Mm. And they're supposed to be set up on a commercial basis to do property development. And the fact of the matter is, since December the 31st, 2006, Unicott has not published audited accounts. We have a company that its own lawyer said at the Commission of Inquiry is worth $20+ billion, billion with a B for big. No accounts for 07, no accounts for 08, no accounts for 09. And that is a matter the public and taxpayers need to tackle seriously. Okay, so I'm urging people who are interested in this issue, and there are a great many of us who are, to keep their eye on that ball. Where are the accounts of this so-called successful state enterprise? If that is exemplary behavior, the entire country is in a problem.
You prompted a question.
Sure.
You know, and I think the regular man on the street would ask, if we're to deduce from this, what you've said about the Unicott and controlling the entire thing, are we even going to look for a fair report at the end of the day? Is it going to be sanitized? Is it going to be, you know?
I really don't want to go into that. That's a whole huge, messy discussion, and I prefer to wait and see what happens. I am optimistic. I put a lot of effort myself into the commission. I'm hoping some good could come out of it. I really don't want to go any further down that avenue.
All right. We're going to take a break, Sir Charles. We're in the final segment of the program, and when we come back, we continue to chat with Mr. Afra Rehman on several issues here in Trinity Bigger. Stay with us. People, just to let you know that you wanted a bigger jackpot, well, you got it. $7.8 million is just waiting for you in this Saturday's Lotto Plus draw. And there's only one way that you can get it. Yeah. If you want to get it into your bank account, you got to have a Lotto Plus ticket for this Saturday's draw. You would have a chance. So, what would you do with that $7.8 million? You can do whatever you want. Just make sure you get your Lotto Plus ticket today. And of course, Larry, you have to remind me to go get my Lotto Plus ticket.
I am going right after I'm done here. I am going to go get tickets.
Right.
All right, we're back on the program. Afra Rehman is our guest today. We're discussing several things. CLICO, of course, is the bailout of CLICO. Mm-hmm. The main topics, so Charles, we wanted to check some messages on the board.
Especially messages coming in from Marlon. Marlon say he really wants to know about that. It's CEO and the under the value and healthy assets, you know. You say because people lost their life savings, and you really want to know about that.
Okay. I don't want to spend too much important time talking about this, but nonetheless, those allegations that Hannah Ryan just made on the radio, he made them on the air in 05, okay, on his radio station, Shakti. He went on for a long time, for 2.5 hours, allegations about undervaluation and unprofessional conduct and so on. We took legal action against him, and Mr. Hanarayan and the Hindu Credit Union never filed a defense. Okay. We got what is called a default judgment, which is when the other side has nothing to say. Okay. I was awarded, and our firm was awarded, the highest ever award in this jurisdiction of damages for libel and slander. Okay, we are moving to recover those monies. We recovered a good part of it already. We're in the High Court on the 4th, which is next week, Thursday, and you will read it in the press. We are going to recover the rest of it. They went to the appeal court to try to have the lower judgment overturned, and they lost in that arena as well. That matter has been settled in court. The Hindu Credit Union and Mr. Hanarayan have had their day and the judgment was in our favor. So I don't want to say any more about that.
All right. Well, we're left with just a few minutes left. So in wrapping up with it, let's talk about the terms of the CLECO bailout. Let's wrap up with that.
Sure.
We just have a few minutes. Tell us a bit about it.
Sure. Well, I think the terms are very important to understand. Let me just run through what I see as the key terms. Number one is that despite the political statements, and there have been statements in the budget and so on, I'm not sure that anywhere there's been any limit set on how much money is actually going to be pumped into this thing. There's
and
been
that
no
is
ceiling
the frightening
set.
Thing.
So figures have been mentioned, but we have not had sight of the second MOU. And in the absence of that second MOU, we do not know. Because the first MOU certainly didn't set a limit. So number one, we have financing without limit. Number two, although the first MOU spoke to the sale of assets to return the money to the Treasury, to replenish the Treasury, that hasn't taken place. And we've had statements by ministers in the Cabinet, and they've quoted in my website and so on, that in fact assets are not going to be sold. Okay, we've recently had conflicting statements from the governor of the central bank that assets now have to be sold.
Mm-hmm.
But so far, no assets have been sold. Third point, the first MOU was silent on it, and we don't know what the second one says. There's no interest being charged. Now, Sir Charles, if you owe the government taxes, under the law in this country, your annual penalty interest is 20%. Yet it appears that some of the wealthiest people in the country were able to access a line of financing from the Treasury without any interest.
Right.
If interest is being paid and there's a particular sum that has been set, maybe somebody in authority should come and tell us what it is.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as we know, no interest is being paid. There's also been no charges, as I mentioned earlier, and it doesn't appear to be any sort of decision to take criminal action or action even to strike them off as directors.
Mm-hmm.
And lastly, their shareholding in CL Financial has remained intact.
Yeah.
Under the norms of finance, if a company had to receive that quantity of money, that infusion of money, and had no assets, the shareholders' interest would be diluted.
Right.
So they've maintained their shareholding in a company that is being supported by this Treasury, and they've also maintained their private assets.
Yes.
So people haven't even had to sell any private assets.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So those are the basic terms of the thing, Larry.
And I think that is one of the things that I and I suppose John Public, you know, we are really worried about, because I was wondering that, you know, so because these are the people that they should go after first and then let the government, you know, throw in the rest. But it seems that the government, we have jumped in with this bottomless checkbook, and right now we don't know where it's going. I don't know.
Can we see one of your name written on those bottomless checks, your child?
Yeah. We're friends at the end.
Mr. Raymond, I want to thank you for joining
you
with us. It's been a pleasure. Sir Charles, again, thank you. It's been High Noon here, another edition on Power 102.1 FM. And of course, stay tuned. The newly sworn in leader of the opposition is making her way to the parliament. We'll bring you updates of that during the course of today. And of course, you can stay with us on newscast at 4 o'clock. Great programming continues with Sir Charles. I'm Larry Lumsden. Thank you for joining us. And check us out at power102fm.com for breaking news stories.
Thank you.